You are listening to Sånt I livet I Sverige, or That's Life in Sweden, with me, Lisa Uusimäki. In today's program, I'm talking with Martin Jordo about men's violence against women. Welcome. Martin, can you introduce a little bit about your background and who you are and what you do today?
Yes, of course. So the guest you have on today, me, is the economic policy spokesperson for the Swedish political party Feminist Initiative. We're a small feminist party that is represented in 13 city councils in Sweden, but not in parliament, unfortunately. And although I work mainly with economic issues, I also have quite strong opinions on men's violence and topics related to human security. Mm. So that's what I hope to speak to you today about.
Absolutely. You know, when you say the Feministic Initiative, which is the political party here in Sweden, I think it would be really interesting to hear your perspective. Where is the party situated on the spectrum? Is it like the left party here or the Greens, or is it towards the Social Democrats? Can you just give a bit of a brief background so we can kind of understand?
Yes, the feminism is a very broad word that is claimed by a lot of different ideologies. You have socialist feminists, and you have right-wing feminists, and you have Christian feminists and everything. But our political party is an intersectional anti-racist feminist party, which puts us towards the left of a left-right spectrum, and towards the green alternative and liberal spectrum on the on a more values-based scale. So there's been a lot of research on this. Sweden is quite interesting in that way. I think we're a country that has really splintered. We're not all about right wing and left wing anymore, but it is has a lot to do with progressive versus traditionalist policies and cultural policies, and we're definitely a part of that. So what we want to do, or what we aim to, is to reinvigorate the left, so to say, and bring new perspectives to the left side of politics, and challenge those notions from nationalists or conservatives that often tend to go in. It's not all about economic policy, it's about things like military or equality between the sexes, and even the climate.
Right.
So I would say we're a left gal party, green alternative libertarian.
So would you be, so I think there's a lot of people thinking when they think about the left party, and that they tend to be very much about communism.
Mm-hmm.
Is this correct?
Yeah, maybe not nowadays. I don't think communism in the Western world is that prominent, but it definitely has its roots there, and socialism as a ideology has survived for 150 years now and adapted. But I think, I don't think the left and socialism is equivalent. I think there's a lot of ideologies that tend to lean left or be on the left side of the political spectrum that are not socialist in nature. And I'm definitely not a socialist, and the Feminist Initiative don't describe itself as a socialist party, but we do have a very strong sense of social equality and redistribution. But redistribution in the system, so to speak. We don't have a name for the workers to seize the means of production.
Right, right. So another question then, and you call yourself a feminist?
Yes, of course.
So why? What were your reasons to become a feminist?
Well, why not? Why not?
Oh, okay.
I think the question needs to be turned around at this day and age. If you don't define yourself as a feminist, you have to explain what your reasonings are, or how you came to that conclusion. Because being a feminist is just a common sense position nowadays. It's been recognized by society at large that women are disadvantaged in society, and it has also been established as a norm that this is unjust. And we still know that these inequalities exist, and therefore the logical conclusion is that if you want to change that, then you are a feminist. You see that there is a systematic disadvantage for women in society, and you want to do something about it. It's not more complex than that.
Right. It's very simple.
Yes, for me at least.
Yes. Martin, and you know what is really interesting is that the fact that Sweden is also a very individualistic country. And
yes,
so,
I would agree.
Yes, so here I'm then thinking feminism or feministic initiative, it's very much about human rights and it's about equality, social justice issues. How do they kind of match? I mean, there are, you know, we talk about individuality. It's me against you. And feminism is about us.
Yeah, that's a very interesting topic, because first off, I would agree that Sweden is very individual. I mean, a lot of people talk about the collective and the social democratic old history of Sweden, but the Nordic countries in general is at the forefront of being very individualized, I would say, because we have a high economic development, and we also have a very progressive stance on cultural issues. So things like the human rights adopted by the United Nations after the Second World War has really taken a hold in the Nordic countries. I mean, we even in Sweden this year made a convention on children, I think it's called, a binding law in Swedish law. And we've done that with other UN charters as well. And I think that's a very positive development, because you could also describe feminism as a part of a human rights movement and implementing the human rights, because it's not worth very much if it's just written paper in the United Nations. It has to be implemented on national policy level. So we've done that a lot in Nordic countries, but that also makes, as you in the second line in your question, feminism is also a very collective movement, and it's also kind of a reaction against liberalism, where you are just one person at a time, because feminism talks a lot about community and caring. We talk about caring policies. How can we make people care more for the environment, for each other, for the children? And that's I think you have to sort of take the route through the individual human rights to reach a next stage. Like, for instance, we're talking now about giving nature its own rights, like human rights, but rights for nature. And
yes,
that is something which is very interesting, which I think we'll see more about in the next decades to come.
Yes, the environmental rights. And of course, we have a wonderful spokesperson about from Sweden with Greta Thunberg, who is very strong about the environmental rights. Wonder, why do you think men's violence against women continues to be such an ongoing issue, not only here in Sweden, but across the world?
Because it's there. It's endemic. It's part of human society and has been for thousands of years. And we just recently, really the last century, began to question it and see it as something that we abnormal, that we want to remove. And that is a very, very long process, because we're changing the whole relationship between men and women and the way they relate to each other. First off, let me start that my area of expertise is more about men's violence in general. It's not specifically about men's violence to against women, which is kind of a subcategory to men's violent behavior in general. And I speak more about how men can change, and and there's other voices that are a lot better to interview about the realities for women, because I don't suppose to know that or to be an expert about that. But I can speak a lot about how men come to a position where they hit their partner, or how they assault a stranger, or the sexual violence that is endemic throughout the world, and how this intersects with other forms of violence, like, for instance, war or political conflict, where the violence against women also become an integrated part.
Right. So where do you want to start?
I think, maybe we start, that's a good question, but we start on the broad sense and then sort of burrow down to specifics. But I think something is twisted in men's attitude towards masculinity and towards violence. And that's really the root cause for nearly all the violence in the world, which is, for me, a paradox, because we spend a lot of time, not only in politics, but in culture, in society, to talk about effects of violence, to want to avoid it. We teach our children how to avoid potentially violent situations. The whole foreign policy of countries is based on the threat of violence or the protection from violence. But we really want to avoid this, and we see it as a problem, but we don't really go to the causes of violence. That's interesting. Go ahead.
So do you think then that the stricter laws as are currently implemented here in Sweden will kind of end violence against women?
No, I do believe that the laws can be harsher for specifically about sexual violence, for instance, because we have to remember that we come from a background or a culture where it actually was legal to rape, your wife. And we have to change that mindset. So in Sweden, we have this consent law, which is quite a new thing. It's only been around a couple of years, which basically says that you have to know that the typically the woman in a situation wants to have sex. You can't just assume it, or you have to check. And that's a very, very good law, and it will take time for young people to grow up with this law, and the culture will change eventually. But going back to like harsher laws, in most of violent crime, which is not violence against women in like domestic partnerships, but like criminal violence on the streets, it's not that affected by harsher laws. And we know that through research, it's been proven over and over again that you can't really put your typically young men with low income and low education that commit crimes, just lock them away in prisons. It will only lead to like a deteriorating situation. We have had so many examples of whole countries trying this. For example, the United States. And they were actually reversing policies. I mean, the current trend in the States is due for prison reform and judicial reform of reducing sentences. And so I don't want, it's a kind of a double different takes on different issues, different types of crime.
Right.
But I definitely believe that laws against or punishment for sexual violence can be increased in Sweden.
And so you believe that that will kind of change the culture?
Yes, it's not about the individual man. It's not about like deterrent either, that no, men don't go about and think about the length of a prison sentence before they rape someone. But it usually affects the culture, the man culture.
Yeah.
In society, if some things are outlawed, and not only outlawed with a slap on the wrist, but severely punished, because then it's considered a crime and it's talked about as a crime, and people will tell each other off. One good example here in Sweden is the laws against the buying of sex. Prostitution is not illegal in Sweden, but buying sex is.
Right.
And it's been a crime for nearly two decades now, but it's been a very minor crime. It's been basically a fee that you pay, or like, and it's been hush hush. No one knows about it. You pay your fee and you're done. Now they're talking about increasing it to a mandatory prison sentence. And even if it's a small sentence, even if it's 30 days or 60 days, that I believe will create a huge shift in how specifically young men view the buying of women or buying of sex from women, because it's no longer something they can argue that, oh, this should be okay. It's just a silly fine that is implemented by the stupid politician. It's an actual crime which carries a prison sentence, and they'll have to make a, some kind of take that into account, because it is a premeditated action. Mm. That's not a something that you happen to do. That's something you choose to do.
Mm-hmm. So where do you think boys learn to behave badly?
Oh, from other boys. It's all about socializing, isn't it? And for girls as well, because you're not, as Simone de Beauvoir said, about you're not born a woman, you've become a woman. In the same way, a boy is not born a man, and they talk a lot, if you think about it, boys talk a lot about becoming a man. And what is becoming a man? It's learning, decoding codes from culture and from other boys on supposed behaviors about masculinity. Because a lot of our identity as persons are based on gender, and you want so badly, a lot of young boys really want to be a masculine man because they believe that that will be attractive to women. It will give them status towards other boys, and it will make them feel good for themselves. Sometimes you talk about hyper masculinity, and I think that's quite a good word, because in the worst instances, it's small trends in masculinity turned up to 11, so to speak.
Right.
And it, yeah, and that's an ongoing process. It's not something that happens at one time or through one computer game or a magazine or even a parent. It's mostly about boys hanging out with other boys. And there's a reason why society fears like teenage boys in groups, especially if they start using drugs or alcohol and if they're marginalized in society. Almost every society in not only around the globe, but in history, have had trouble with that group. It's young men trying to become men through some kind of ritualistic and behavior that often challenges the norms of society.
Right. And then we have when the boys behave badly as young men, they become men, mm-hmm. and they kind of develop these boys clubs where they exclude each other, even other men, but certainly women. Is that
yes? Can you develop that a bit?
Yes, I'm just thinking where you were mentioning that when young boys, it's very much about who they hang out with, where they feel, where they get a sense of self identity in a group, whether it's within a sports or whether it is within a gang, and then how that. Or even within a wealthy family, and wealthy boys get together and they can get away with things because parents may have money, or they can get them out of trouble by paying for better lawyers, etc. And then, of course, when these guys become men and we have these so-called boys or men's clubs where basically men... They're a very select group of men, and we can look at America, or you can look at any billionaire group of men, and there's been so many examples that has come up with the abuse of their power. So they basically exclude others and it's about power over the other.
Yes, it's very good that you made that link, Lisa. So I do believe that power and dominance is a learned behavior, and that is quite masculine, or that is at least thought of. It's something that young boys train on, and then train this on each other to have a pecking order.
That's
who's
right.
In, who's out, how to exclude others, how to, teasing and bullying and those kind of behaviors. They're a kind of training ground for adult life, because even if you get in a different social situation, for instance, you put on a suit and start working at an office, but as you mentioned, there could still be that same views but in a different setting, and then you can use your power and your dominance in some other way. Maybe it's more economic, and it's more about oppression of workers or from people in other economies, in other countries. But it's still the same behavior. And that's why I think we need to challenge that and bring in a more feminine view of socializing into all spectres of society, or all aspects. Because we come from a history where the public life was made by men for men. The companies were for men, the town hall were for men, even the squares in the city were for men. And it's quite, historically speaking, we've slowly opened this up for women. And then we are here, maybe in the Western world, in one, some of the more equal countries. And we claim, oh, now it's done, because women can be a president of a company, or we can have a female president of a country. So equality is done. But we haven't challenged the structures of public life that were built by men for men, or with like a masculine structure. And they haven't been designed by women, not at all. And I think that's one of the large shifts in human history, actually, if we go very large here, that for the first time in our existence as a civilization, we will try to reimagine what society can be if we put a more female aspect on it. And I don't think that people see that change or see how that can be. If we center, for instance, care about each other, and we lose a bit of this anxiety for constant achievements and status, that would be a different world. And I think, to bring back to what you earlier said about Greta Thunberg, I think that's a very good visualization of what happens where a young woman challenges the way the world works. She just sits down there in front of Parliament and says, I won't put up with this. We're destroying our world. And it's not a coincidence that it is a young woman, because that's who is at the barricades now. Who will lead the future? It's the teenagers of Greta Thunberg's. There's a whole generation of them that will grow up and be the future policymakers and the future, I hate to say power players, but like the ones running the world. And we, on the opposite end of the spectrum, then we have people like myself, the somewhat older men that are used to be listened to and to have power, and they're just dizzy. Donald Trump is a perfect picture of that. They just can't understand that they will lose power to Greta Thunberg, and they can't accept it. So they go reactionary backlash against everything. But of course, it's doomed to fail, because they're like 60 years old and they will die away with their old time masculinity. And there will be different new values that will take more place in the world.
Yes, yeah. Yes. You know, I'm really interested in the actual values that, you know, when I think about Greta Thunberg, and I'm thinking about in Sweden, well, you know, what are the values?
Yes. Do you know this World Values Survey, VVS?
Yeah.
That's, it's not perfect, but I think it's a pretty good fit on like where it put the Nordic countries, because as I mentioned before, we're not only very individualistic, we're also very secular, and we also very well off, extremely well off financially. Mm. Which puts us together then with a social democrat tradition, yeah. Put us kind of ahead of the pack, if I say, as you may say, in adopting human rights. But also, there's a downside to that, or like a blind spot, because we think we're so excellent and that we have achieved so much. So we try to lecture the rest of the world on how they should behave. And we definitely outknow a lot. Maybe you can speak to this, but a lot of people that have not only a Swedish background, but also from other countries, they can see this more clearly. That Swedes, I think, can have values that are quite nationalistic and prideful without even realizing it. They won't call themselves nationalists. They'll just say that Yeah, this is a really good country, and other people should do be more like us. But that's also part of nationalism, and we have to learn more and take in. I'm heavily influenced by, for instance, by thinkings from indigenous people in South America. There's whole concepts that basically are feminists, but are feminists and has been around for thousands of years and been marginalized by the organization, the economic development, and we need to reclaim that, and that we need to listen to them, not the other way around.
And that's a really good point. And a lot of our indigenous people in the world, we could certainly learn a lot from them. And yes.
I think that might be part of this arrogance also that comes from our social democrat heritage of trying. Folkhemmet is a Swedish term, the people's home. It was a concept for decades that we wanted to build the caring state that would take care of your troubles, and if everyone just behaved, we would make a better society.
Right.
And now we challenge that with, I mean, it's a fact that we have been more split apart as a more multicultural society, not only because of migration, but also because values go apart more, and we're more globalized, and we have a lot more information now. And I don't think us Swedes are very good at handling that. Like you mentioned, we have a very strong push to make people behave like us. So we had quite a generous asylum policy for a long time, although sadly not for the last 5 years. And so we took in a lot of asylum seekers, but we took it for granted that they would integrate, as we say in Sweden, into Swedish society. And we didn't even talk about having a multicultural society, as for, which is perfectly normal in discussions in other countries like Canada, or even the United States, or where they have more of a melting pot concept that it's okay to have different identities, it's okay to have different cultural heritage and live peacefully together. But Sweden is, it's a lot about becoming a Swede and integrating. And if I can bring this back to a bit about men's violence against women, that's actually been a kind of a discussion point in politics in Sweden now, because our nationalist party, or actually our racist party, it's called the Sweden Democrats, they have been very silent for years and years about men's violence against women. They like to talk about men's violence against men, criminality, but they don't like to talk about the domestic violence. But recently they've adopted a new tactic, and that is to blame everything on the immigrants, of course, and talk about imported values and try to make it that Sweden is such an equal and feminist society, so all this violence against women, it has to have come from somewhere else and be an important problem. The trouble with that narrative, of course, is that it's not true. It's not what the statistics say. There is a slight increase of the possibility of the assault of being of foreign-born, but that's totally dependent on them being poorer in society. It has nothing to do with race or ethnicity in its own sake. And actually, some of the cultures are like they don't generally drink alcohol the way Swedes do, which is a health factor against men's violence against women. But that's a very, very interesting discussion, because then we can go about how violence what they say then is at least they tactically agree that violence against women is a cultural issue. It's not about economics. It has to do with the mindset of the man. And actually, I think that's at least some progress, even on their side, because then we can start to like work. If we can only say, yeah, but how does this come about? How is that disputed amongst men in society? Then we can also start working on that. So tying it back to that, how boys raise boys, and what cultures are accepted amongst men in society.
Thank you so much, Martin, for being part of That's Life in Sweden, or as we say in Swedish, Sånt är livet i Sverige. För tillfället, det ändras ju.
Sånt är livet.
Sånt är livet. I'll talk to you another time. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you, Lisa.